Today on Jay Sekulow Live, exclusive analysis of the 2020 election and what effect COVID-19 may or may not have on the November 3rd election.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
So yesterday, I was on with Sean Spicer on his Newsmax television broadcast, and I hope some of you saw that. It was just for about 6-7 minutes, and we were talking about my book, The Next Red Wave, and how grassroots organizing is being affected by COVID-19, and how COVID-19 could affect the November 3rd election, what we can do now, what we should be doing now, and how it will affect the election. I want to take your calls on that, 1-800-684-3110. Do you believe that by November 3rd of 2020, when we are casting our ballots for President of the United States, many of us for U.S. Senate races, all of us for House races, do you believe that we will be kind of over COVID-19? Now, I don't mean economically, and I don't mean that it's completely eradicated, but that we'll be kind of back to normal by November? Or are you concerned about that fall next wave of COVID-19? And again, how that can affect the election? We want to take your phone calls on that, 1-800-684-3110. And I'm not trying to take away from the loss of life, from the seriousness of COVID-19, but I mean, we are in, again, folks, the end of April, and we've got an election for President of the United States in November, at a time when you cannot do campaign rallies, you can't gather together to do neighborhood walks, so grassroots organizing has to look a lot differently. And I think one thing we are all learning from this COVID-19 experience is that we can begin grassroots organizing right now, because from every age group, from the oldest to the youngest, are starting to use technology at a level they have not used before to stay connected. And Than, I believe that is key right now in this process. Even if, let's say, by August we can actually start really, you know, the kind of real campaign work, going door to door, we can start organizing right now through the technology that we have. And I think we're more connected to our local community than maybe we ever have been in the past.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jordan. And I think we saw foreshadowing of this in the last election cycle, certainly the last presidential election cycle, where you saw more social media engagement, more electronic grassroots activity than ever before. And look, I think to answer your question, Jordan, about what the impact politically is going to be from this coronavirus crisis, I think a lot of people instantly jump to, well, will the president and other candidates, for that matter, be able to do these massive rallies? Obviously, that was one of the strengths of the president. And if he's not able to, that might hurt him or other candidates who are able to draw a big crowd. But Jordan, you know, interestingly enough, when it comes to the president, while that strength might diminish, his other strength, and I would argue maybe it's a stronger one, his presence on social media would become even more important. So, you know, that might sort of work itself out. But when it comes to those of us on a grassroots level, I think none of us are going to draw massive rallies, but all of us have a presence electronically. And I think that will become even more disproportionately important even than it was in 2016. And Jordan, in 2016, it was more important than ever before.
I mean, think about it. We're 187 days away. That may seem like a long time, but think about how long it might be until states are truly open. Even in states other than Georgia, which is kind of taking a more extreme route, even states that are starting to open are opening at very slow rates, and they're always very cautious, saying, we may be opening, but we're always going to be ready to pull back. So we may be at phase one, we may make it to phase two, but then go back to phase one. So I think it's important for everyone right now to understand clearly, you can begin grassroots organizing right now utilizing social media. But how will this affect? And the fact that Joe Biden is just doing everything from home, all of that, we've got more sound to play from him and his pledge to abortion, and it's essential, and it's an essential medical service and required. We'll be talking about all that and taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Remember, donate to the ACLJ. 2 days left of the matching challenge, aclj.org.
It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at ACLJ.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at ACLJ.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at ACLJ.org. For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at ACLJ.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at ACLJ.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at ACLJ.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. You know, there's been this talk, Joe Biden even saying, hey, maybe we should suspend and delay the presidential election and not have it on November 3rd. That is not going to happen, folks. I mean, we've got congressional statutes, the Constitution mandates the four-year term, beginning in January. And so, I mean, there's a whole host of legal issues standing in the way of trying to change the election, especially when it comes to the election of the president and vice president of the United States of America. But then we're starting to see from people like former Vice President Biden this idea that because he's been kind of stuck at home with these bizarre videos, and yes, he's getting some endorsements. He got the Hillary Clinton endorsement. He's gotten the Barack Obama endorsement now. It's not having the same kind of weight because everything's being done through kind of his technology, and it's only reaching really the people who already support him. They're going to his website to watch. It's not being broadcast everywhere, and even if it is, it's short clips. It's not like a rally situation where Barack Obama is able to get 25 or 30,000 people together at an event, or Hillary Clinton bringing in people in an event. That's not happening for Joe Biden, and his messaging has not been very clear either. So without him on the campaign trail and some other scandals that we're not going to get into kind of perking up for Biden himself, you have to wonder, there's this move by him to say, well, maybe we should push back. But President Trump has said absolutely not. And Than, just to make it clear to everybody listening, Congress mandates the date. They're given that power in the Constitution. But the Constitution goes further in the 20th Amendment because it says when the new president and vice president have to be sworn in.
Well, first of all, Jordan, I just can't even imagine the outcry that would have happened if this comment had come from President Trump. I can tell you right now that the headlines would have been that President Trump is trying to overturn election law in order to become president into perpetuity. So, look, the idea of a double standard of how the media will react to a comment like this, I think, is on full display. But really, Jordan, I think the former vice president's comments actually move us sort of to a secondary question that I think the left is trying to get to, and that is centralization of control of the elections. You're exactly right. This election is going to go forward on November 3rd. But just as certain, it's going to look different than other elections, and states are going to have to come up with ways to best handle the procedures inside their state that allows for maximum voting participation while still ensuring the safety both of the health of voters, but Jordan, also the integrity of the ballots that are cast. And so I really think this was sort of a stepping stone to get to some of the centralization of election efforts that are happening in Washington, D.C. And I would tell you the most effective response for states who want to guard against that is to defend the rights of states to make those decisions close to the voters, because that is what is going to preserve the integrity of it. And quite frankly, Jordan, it's what is going to make a November 3rd election day the most successful if those states can tailor their approach to the facts that fit their state. I think that's where the vice president was driving, though. Whether it's mail, vote by mail or any other centralization effort, Jordan, I think that's what he was trying to get at.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, and you've got to be very careful about those situations. I mean, some states who have had more history in doing that, obviously all states allow for some kind of absentee ballot, but you have to apply for an absentee ballot. You have to actually go and put in information about why you need it and request it, and so it's kind of a process. These mail-in ballot states, some have had a lot of experience with it. Other states have never done it before at all, so it'd be something brand new. And this is, we're talking about electing a president of the United States, so is that the best time to start something brand new? Now, how much the pandemic will play into that depends on where we are in November. That also plays into what kind of grassroots organizing there's been. But listen, here is President Trump. He directly responds to Joe Biden's statement. He gets the question by the reporter at a White House briefing. Take a listen to President Trump.
Your likely Democratic opponent, Joe Biden, recently suggested that you were considering changing the date of the election, that you might try something like that. That's my first question. The same question.
I never even thought of changing the date of the election. Why would I do that? November 3rd. It's a good number. No, I look forward to that election. And that was just made up propaganda, not by him, but by some of the many people that are working, writing little statements. I see all the time, statement made. You say so, statement made. Per Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe, he didn't make those statements, but somebody did. But they said he made it. No, let him know. I'm not thinking about it at all. Not at all.
You know, I think some of it's that kind of factor of, oh, the president just wants to remain president. He wants to delay the election. And we have to be through it. That is not the case. So you just heard it from the president's own mouth. He's preparing for a November 3rd election, which is what every president has prepared for. And that's what we're going to have. But then it's also important to look at, as we're taking phone calls on this, because I really want to hear from people. How do they think this will affect the vote come November 3rd? How will it affect, if you're very involved politically, your grassroots organizing? Are you starting to think, hey, I need to do more online organizing in my local community? To remember, you can do virtual phone banks now, and campaigns will start rolling that out the sooner we get to the actual election. So there's a lot we can do from home, and the technology just gets better and better and easier to use. But there is something about person-to-person contact when it comes to elections. And person-to-person contact is right now a big no-no. So, I mean, whether it's big rallies or just knocking on doors or just communicating to people, that's right now really not an option. So you've got to use technology to begin to organize. But then it's not just the presidential election either. Now we've got, you know, in the U.S. Senate, we have 35 of its 100 seats are up for re-election. The GOP controls 53 right now. So, I mean, there's an important election just in the U.S. Senate to keep control there.
Yeah, person-to-person contacts are the most important factor in every race, Jordan. But the closer you get to a smaller local election, the more important grassroots activity and person-to-person contacts become. So I would tell you that for Senate elections that are statewide, it's even more important than on the presidential level. If you go to a House race on a district level, it's even more important. If you went down to like a city council, it would be maximum importance. But Jordan, to answer your question about the United States Senate, The control of the United States Senate does hang in the balance. I mean, the Republicans have a six-seat advantage right now, 53 seats to 47 seats for the Democrats. And I would tell you, I think the most likely seat to flip control still benefits the Republicans. It's the seat in Alabama that Doug Jones currently holds, and that Jeff Sessions and Tommy Tuberville are still in a runoff election in the primary to challenge him. And maybe the fact that it's going to a runoff helps Doug Jones somewhat. But Jordan, if the Republicans do flip that seat back, it gives them 54 seats, but probably the next four or five or six seats, somewhere in that range, that are most likely to flip are Democrats challenging Republican incumbents. So, Jordan, when you talk about the importance of grassroots activity, I think always the first thing that's going to come to mind is the presidential election. But the United States Senate, if you were to see an impact move very hard in one direction or another, I think control of the United States Senate is definitely on the ballot in November as well.
I mean, realize that. That was probably not the case a few months ago, but because the economy was roaring, we weren't dealing with COVID-19. But I think COVID-19 has kind of changed everything in the ability for, you know, where do Americans put blame? Where how do they feel about how their politicians are responding? So in the Senate, again, right now, 23 of the 35 seats up for election in the U.S. Senate are held by Republicans. 12 are held by Democrats. So Democrats would need a net gain of four to outright win the Senate, or they could win three seats and win the presidency because the vice president could be the tie-breaking vote. Now, going back to the president and vice presidential race, one thing that's key here, Than, and this could mobilize Joe Biden, it could also kind of be a non-factor. It really depends, I think, in this election more so than ever, because usually I believe that VP picks don't have a huge impact on the actual election day. That's not who people choose to vote for. They can have huge impacts in the administration, and they can certainly bolster they can bolster the team. But Joe Biden has got a very important choice to make, because it's probably going to be the VP choice that gets him the most attention over these next few months when they try to go into a Democrat convention, which you have to wonder, how is that even going to work?
It's really a great point, Jordan, because look, as more and more of this does move online, I mean, I think even the former vice president would probably admit that he's not the most natural fit for that. And he's going up against a president who is better at the social media or online game than any other candidate I think we've ever seen. So I do think it's going to be very important for Vice President Biden's pick to serve as a running mate to be able to fill that void. Now, he said it's going to be a woman. There's a lot of speculation about people like Stacey Abrams and other. Look, Jordan, but you're right. I think he has to pick someone that can fill that weakness that he has in a way that is really beyond what would be expected of a traditional running mate.
All right, so folks, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. How do you believe that COVID-19 will affect the November 3rd election for president, the balance of the Senate, and of course, we haven't even gotten to, could we flip the House of Representatives to stop some of this presidential harassment if President Trump is re-elected? We're taking your phone calls. Also remember, today and tomorrow, final today is the matching challenge. Donate online, aclj.org. Our attorneys are hard at work for life right now.
For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at aclj.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at aclj.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at aclj.org. It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at aclj.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow, and let me just let everybody know. I know Tham Bennett is in the studio in Washington, D.C. He's able to social distance because he is the only staff person going into that office, and the rest are working remotely, and he's just going in for radio, so keeping him safe. I will be back in our studios as well on Monday, so you'll get that image from me. My dad will be when he is on, he's preparing for a Supreme Court case. He should be joining us in just a few minutes, actually, on the broadcast. Today he'll be joining us, and he'll have his video set up so he can be on. So you'll see all of us, for the most part, starting next week. I have to play this from Joe Biden, because this was yesterday when Hillary Clinton announced her endorsement of Joe Biden. And he made this comment because this is a whole issue we're involved in right now. In fact, we filed our 10th brief. Since I posted that video and we've updated the blog, we've actually filed our 10th brief when it comes to these states who have said abortion is elective, and if we're not going to allow elective medical procedures, we're not going to allow abortion either. We're working on these, again, 10 briefs. We're working on it in, six different states so far, five different circuit courts of appeals at all different levels. Listen to Joe Biden. He has a very different view of what it means for abortion as essential. And this is, again, when he's getting the Hillary Clinton endorsement yesterday at his virtual town hall, Bite 2.
We need to ensure that women have access to all health services during this crisis. Abortion is an essential health care service. It's being used as a political wedge right now, and it shouldn't be.
You know, again, Than, I want to go right to you on this, because the idea here, we're fighting this right now, and we have updates regularly on our ACLJ.org because we keep filing new briefs, new cases. We're actually also filed two new briefs at the U.S. Supreme Court on life issues. It just shows you the difference between President Trump and these state governors who have decided that, hey, if we're not going to allow you to have foot surgery right now, or even more serious surgeries, but they're still considered elective, we're not going to allow elective abortions, which require PPEs and take away supplies from people on the front lines.
It's a brazen double standard, Jordan, and I will agree with the former vice president on one narrow point here. I will agree with him that it is being used as a political wedge right now, but Jordan, it's being used as a political wedge by the abortion industry itself. Look, this is just the simple fact. Planned Parenthood, NARAL, and others have decided that elective abortions are the only elective procedures that are more important than the COVID response. That's literally what they are saying. They are saying that elective abortions should be taking PPE and other resources away from the COVID response, but all of the other elective procedures are less important than that response. And Jordan, just to underscore a point that you made, and I know your dad made on the broadcast yesterday, I have personal acquaintances, a number of them, who are having to postpone elective procedures. And I think sometimes we think of elective procedures as things that are not significant. Jordan, that is not the case. I have friends that are in pain at every moment of every day because they know they cannot have this elective elective procedure right now until this response is over. The idea that that person would have to wait for that procedure, but yet we're going to take resources from the COVID response for elective abortions and push the other elective procedures even further into the future, Jordan, it's laughable, but that's what's happened. So the narrow issue I'll agree with the vice president on, it is being used as a political wedge, but it's not being used by as a political wedge by those of us like the ACLJ who are defending the states for applying it uniformly. It's being used as a political wedge by the abortion industry itself.
I mean, check this out. He goes even further. Joe Biden yesterday, again, standing there with Hillary Clinton. Remember, Hillary Clinton was the one standing there with Governor Cuomo when New York passed that legislation that Governor Cuomo signed allowing abortion up until birth, and she was standing with him celebrating that. She was also standing with Joe Biden yesterday at the, you know, with this virtual town hall with her endorsement and endorsing this message as well. Take a listen from Joe Biden saying, states, you have no role in abortion, which is actually not even constitutionally correct based on even Roe versus Wade. Take a listen, bite four.
States should not be using public health crisis to infringe on a woman's constitutional right.
Here's the issue. A lot of our constitutional rights have been infringed on. The ability to go where we want to go. The ability to gather the way we want to gather. They've been infringed upon. But when it comes to the medical side of this, Than, which I think is even more significant, it's like an American duty that we are going to put the healthcare frontline workers who are battling COVID-19 first, and that only states that are ready to begin elective procedures because their hospitals aren't overwhelmed and because they have enough PPEs, they have enough ventilators, and they could be ready for emergency situations that aren't related to COVID-19, should even be considering reopening to elective procedures. Some are, and others are far away from that.
Yeah, a couple of things here, Jordan. First of all, if you're going to postpone elective procedures across the board, you've got to do it equally. You can't start exempting elective procedures like abortions. Otherwise, it undermines the very effect that you're getting at, which is to try to free up those resources for the COVID response. The second thing, though, Jordan, and this goes back to something that we dealt with before coronavirus was even on the scene, the abortion industry has consistently opposed requirements to make sure that abortion facilities can admit a woman to a hospital if she has complications from abortion. And Jordan, unfortunately, we know that complications that are life-threatening to the mother happen in a disproportionate way when it comes to these procedures. So if you're going to expand the access to elective procedures, you're actually going to put more women who suffer complications into that health resources system at a time when it cannot handle it. Jordan, I would just tell you, this is about a lot more than abortion. This is about women's health, and what they are proposing would directly put at risk women who would seek these elective procedures.
Well, and check this out. Right after Joe Biden made these comments, Hillary Clinton followed up with a push for universal health care. She said, amen. Now let's get to universal health care, which would include that abortion on demand included in universal health care. Take a listen, bite six.
And then it needs to be part of a much larger system that eventually and quickly, I hope, gets us to universal health care. So I can only say amen to everything you're saying, but also to, again, enlist people that this would be a terrible crisis to waste, as the old saying goes.
You know, a terrible crisis to waste is the old Rahm Emanuel line. And we're hearing that more and more from Democrats. We've heard that from House members on the Democrat side. Now we're hearing it from top officials like the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, former Democrat presidential candidate who has endorsed Joe Biden, saying a crisis is a terrible crisis to waste to get to universal health care that includes abortion that you'll be paying for with your tax dollars. That's why we're fighting so aggressively right now. I mean, in court right now, we have filed 10 briefs in the past 3 weeks in 5 different circuit courts on behalf of 6 different states to defend life. We have 2 briefs being filed at the Supreme Court right now to defend life. Support the work of the ACLJ. It continues during this crisis. final 2 days, today and tomorrow, of our matching challenge for April. That means whatever you donate is effectively doubled. Double the impact of your donation. Donate online at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Donate today. We'll be right back. Second half hour coming up.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
So we talked about Joe Biden doubling down on abortion as essential care, that states should have no role. Of course, that's in direct contrast to the legal battles we're fighting right now, where states are saying that we're not going to allow abortion distortion if elective medical procedures are going to be banned during the response to COVID-19. Abortion is going to be included in that because it takes away from vital PPEs, people that need to go to emergency rooms following abortions. We need to focus on the front lines of those battling COVID-19. Now, some states are starting to open up to elective procedures, and that means that abortion will, unfortunately, begin to operate as normally. But we have to fight because other states are long, far away from that still. And it's also an important precedent to set because you want to make sure that if, let's say, unfortunately, COVID-19 has a comeback in the fall or even in late summer, and we have to put these restrictions back in place again on elective medical procedures, we want to make sure we've been in court across the country, and we have in 5 different circuit courts in 6 different states, 10 different briefs that have been filed, setting the precedent that abortion should be treated like other elective medical procedures. And if other elective medical procedures are not being allowed to be performed, neither should abortion. And we're winning these. They're at all different stages of court right now. You can keep up to date at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. I want to go right to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. And then I want to get into one that we haven't touched yet. You know, we've touched the presidential election. We've touched the Senate. We can go back through those numbers again if you're just joining us. But I know for a lot of folks, the House, they would like to see Nancy Pelosi no longer the Speaker of the House. And remember, the House has been so much of the, I think, thorn in the side of the president, like Adam Schiff, with this constant presidential harassment. Even the cases that'll be part of the case of my dad are arguing at the Supreme Court by phone for the first time in history, May 12th. You'll, I think, be able to listen to that live audio during that, is what the court is saying. And it's going to be set up very differently. Give you a little update on that. The court announced that how it will work is the you will start your oral argument. You will get a minute to 2 minutes to make your opening statement. The Chief Justice will get to go first with his line of questions, and then it will go not just like kind of usual where it's kind of back and forth, whoever justice kind of jumps in. It'll then go by seniority. So it'll be a very different process as than is usual when you are at oral argument inside the courtroom, which can get pretty heated and a lot of back and forth. Doesn't mean it won't get heated on the oral argument by phone, but it's going to be much more structured than it usually is when it comes to the time when justices have questions, especially on these important issues. I want to go to the take a phone call now. Let's go to Donna in New Jersey online too. Donna, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call. I have one question that was in my mind about the presidential election, as you were speaking about it earlier. How feasible would it be for the nation to vote online for president?
I would say no way, no way, no way is our technology secure enough then to even go there. I know people have talked about it. Maybe in the future we're going to have ways to really secure that. That would need to be tested probably over a decade or longer so that hackers wouldn't have access to it. I mean, think about all the hacking we talk about. Think about what happened with Zoom. When Zoom meetings became popular, they immediately became hacking sources. Than, I would not trust that at all for either party. I don't think either party should trust online voting.
Yeah, it's April and the elections are in November. I go with what you said earlier in the broadcast, Jordan. Some of these states that have been doing mail-in voting and they've proven they can do it well, that's probably about the extent you're going to get to in this election cycle.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, doing it online would make it easy. There'd be high turnout likely, but I think it would take years of testing, and a lot of security to make sure that, because the integrity of our election, integrity of our vote is so key. We come back. How does the House look? How's that makeup look? And continue to take your phone calls on how COVID-19 will affect November 3rd's general election. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at ACLJ.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at ACLJ.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at ACLJ.org. For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at ACLJ.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at ACLJ.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at ACLJ.org.
All right, so as I said, I wanted to, and we're going to get to your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, but I want to get to, so we went through the presidential election. We don't yet know who Vice President Biden, who is the presumptive Democrat nominee, will be choosing for his running mate. I think that'll be bigger than it has been in the past because the traditional model of campaigning is not happening right now. We're not having the rallies, we're not having the events, everything's done electronically. Now, that may change by the end of the summer. That may change by those final 2 months going into the election. And certainly that benefits people like President Trump probably more than it does former Vice President Biden, because he's not very good on the stump. And he's not very good even in these teletown halls. I'm not trying to be mean. He's just not very effective as a communicator. And a lot of times it's very unclear. He's also got some scandals that we're not going to get involved in today that are starting to kind of bubble to the surface as he becomes, the presumptive Democrat nominee. But Than, really where the source of the presidential harassment of President Trump comes from one body in Congress. It is the House of Representatives. Now, God forbid the Senate were to switch too and President Trump was reelected, because I think then it would be all-out war yet again. But we've already gone through Mueller. We've already gone through an impeachment that failed, and this House, it is up for grabs, but it's going to take a lot of grassroots turnout from Republicans.
Yeah, and the reason it's the largest source, Jordan, is because it's where most of the oversight authority starts. It's where impeachment begins. It's where legislative oversight happens, Jordan. It's where the select subcommittee for the coronavirus crisis subcommittee was established last week or a couple of weeks ago. I kid you not. It's the select subcommittee for coronavirus crisis response, even though, Jordan, the oversight committee already had that oversight authority. So you're right. It's the source for so much of this that we've been dealing with over the last couple of years. And Jordan, I do think the House is in play. Look, there's a couple of different ways to look at the numbers in the House. It's always a moving target because of resignations, retirements, vacancies. Currently, the Democrats hold a 232-196 advantage with one independent in the House, Jordan. But with all of the vacancies put back in, kind of the best way, that my favorite way to look at it is, how did these districts go the last time they went to the ballot box? And if you take that metric, there are 235 seats that Democrats won and 200 seats that Republicans won. So Republicans would have to flip from that metric 18 seats in order to take over control of the House. And Jordan, you know this well, but just to remind our listeners, it's not so much control of the House. It's what it means for the Speaker of the House, what it means for controlling the gavel for all of these committees. You would no longer have a Chairman Schiff in the Intel Committee. You would no longer have a Chairman Nadler in the Judiciary Committee. It is the committee control where a lot of that oversight investigation begins that would also flip. So Republicans would need to flip 18 seats. And remember, Jordan, 32 seats held by Democrats that President Trump won. So that 18 number, Jordan, that's definitely in play.
It's definitely in play. Again, it'll all turn to turnout. But I want to underscore what Than said just right there, because it is so important. Remember, it's not just who is Republicans control the House or the Democrats. It's who the Speaker is. It means that Adam Schiff is disempowered, that he is no longer the chair of the Intel Committee, that Jerry Nadler is no longer the head of the Judiciary Committee. It means basically the presidential harassment would end if President Trump were reelected and the House were to flip. Remember those 53 depositions we're talking about that Adam Schiff won't hand over? They'd be handed over if they're not done sooner than that. My dad is joining us now. He was, he's joining us. I think you can actually see him as well on the broadcast if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope. And, Dad, we've been talking about, this kind of COVID-19 and the election coming up in November 3rd and how it's affecting everything from grassroots organizing to campaigning.
Well, you're right. It is. And I just finished a moot court for the Supreme Court cases. But I think, look, I mean, the COVID-19 is going to raise a whole host of legal issues. And those legal issues will be everything from mail-in balloting to voting to early voting. So all of that's going to have to be looked at to make sure that whatever is put in place, it complies with the U.S. Constitution, so that there can be no voter fraud. But I think there's going to have to be some flexibility, but flexibility has to be done in the context of what the Constitution actually allows.
You know, it's interesting. Larry's calling in from Oregon, and he's got some insight into that. Larry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
How you doing? Can you hear me okay?
We got you.
Okay. They've been doing mail-in voting in Oregon for several years now, and if they're going to go to that nationally, I would recommend using Oregon as a model, because a person, once you voted, you can go back in and look at it online and see how your vote was counted. So it's a fail-safe system as far as I'm concerned. It's worked fairly well, but I understand there's a lot of ability to defraud it, and there are several people that have tried it here in Oregon. And it was from the transcription from the time they received it in the mail until they put it in the system. That's where the problem is.
And here's another issue. I think, you know, whereas in Oregon it may be working pretty well, we're 187 days away, and there's many states that all they've ever done is absentee ballots, which is a much more thorough process. You've got to apply for it. You got to tell the government, your state, why you need it, your board of elections. They send you the ballot. You've got to have it in marked, stamped at a certain time. It's different than just everybody gets this ballot mailed to their house and they mail it back in. And for me, Dad, I think it's what's tough is that for the states who are already facing budget crunches because of COVID-19 to go that route without the experience of Oregon would be pretty difficult.
No, I think that's right. I just did a moot court with my colleagues for the Supreme Court case we're doing for the president, and Will Consovoy, who's one of the president's lawyers, one of my colleagues, is handling a lot of that cases. And Patrick Strawbridge, another one of my colleagues, just did the one involving Wisconsin, where they were letting you mail in. I mean, this is what's so bizarre. Mail in your ballot postmarked after the election. Postmarked after the election. And they were saying that was valid. So I think what we have to do as these voting issues come up, these are going to be issues for the American Center for Law and Justice and other groups, because it really does impact the constitutional analysis of the right to vote. That's what's really at play here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and again, I think what we want to talk to you about, and again, we got a final segment coming up as well, 1-800-684-3110, is how do you believe this will affect your ability to grassroots organize where you are in the state that you live, and how do you believe it will affect the November election, whether you're talking about the presidential race, whether you're talking about the makeup of the U.S. Senate, the House. There's lots of state legislative races and gubernatorial races. Is there going to be lower turnout because people are afraid if there is actual in-person voting? Or do you think we are past this in the sense of the medical concern of this, which we're facing right now? We're not going to be past the economic issues. We're still going to be rebuilding from it, obviously. But are we going to be past this? I would love to get your thoughts on this, 1-800-684-3110. I mean, it'd be kind of bizarre that if kids go back to school in the fall, but we can't do voting in person. Now, if kids don't go back to school in the fall in a lot of states across the country, and it's not going to be uniform everywhere. So I think that's where these questions become unique, and why it's interesting to talk to our radio audience about it, because you come from all across the country in all 50 states, and you can kind of give us your input about what it's like in your state right now as we lead into this. And I mean, this is important. This is about choosing who will be the next president of the United States for 4 more years, who will make those important Supreme Court nominations. There will likely be more. And those circuit court nominations, I mean, the circuit courts are changing rapidly under President Trump, and they would change even more rapidly if he were to have another 4 years. But, of course, right now you've got this COVID-19 issue. So we want to take your calls on that, 1-800-684-3110. When we come back from the break, we'll start taking more of those calls, 1-800-684-3110. But, Dad, this is also an important time for the ACLJ. Our attorneys are hard at work. I've been talking to Ed White, one of our attorneys, just updating our blogs at ACLJ.org on just these states that we're representing, 6 states that we're involved with their state legislatures supporting their governors. We have filed now 10 briefs in 5 different circuit courts. Some of those circuit courts are already now en banc, and this is setting major precedent, especially if we ever get to this situation again where elective procedures are closed down. But the ACLJ is hard at work today and tomorrow, our final 2 days of our matching challenge, Dad. And it's a great time for those people who are financially able, who are still getting their normal paycheck. This is a great time for them to support the work of the ACLJ, because our work has not stopped. And even this broadcast is brought to you because of your support and donations to the ACLJ.
No, that's exactly correct. Tomorrow on the broadcast, I'm going to have Andy Economo, one of our senior counsels, join us on this issue of voting, because it's going to be a big one. So we'll get into that. But Jordan just said it. Whether it is the fight for life, which we've been so engaged in over the last month with 10 cases, or if it's going to become the voting issues, which we're going to see those developing too, all of those make a huge difference and a huge impact. Your support of the ACLJ, if you're able, and our matching challenge campaign is doubled. Whatever you donate, we get a matching gift for. So if you're able to support the work of the ACLJ, do it online right now at aclj.org.
For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at aclj.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at aclj.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at aclj.org. It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at aclj.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at aclj.org.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. As you've heard, you know, Joe Biden has said he pledges. All we know about his potential VP pick is that he's pledged to choose a woman as his vice presidential pick. There's lots you could speculate on that right now. But again, I think you just have to wait until the decision is actually made, or, you know, if you start seeing a little bit more information than that. The interesting part is the way Joe Biden is trying to doing this. And Dad, I think before we go to the calls, one of the toughest things for Joe Biden, not only has been his ability to communicate when he was on the campaign trail, but it's even, as we all know, as people who communicate sometimes just by our voice, as I'm doing right now, or just by looking straight into a camera, and we do it without, you know, script. We do it without teleprompter. You've got to be able to put coherent sentences together and make points. And he's had a tough time doing that, even from the comfort of his own home.
Well, look, I mean, I think the fact is, and we know this from, I mean, we just did it for 2 hours on a moot court, yeah, where you have a script, which you can kind of give you your opening, which you pretty much have memorized. But then the questions start and you just got to be able to respond. And then you kind of hone in on those responses. He's had, you know, look, I think here's the situation, though. Despite what I would call a bit of a lackluster campaign on Joe Biden's part, although you got to give him credit because he came back from being, you know, basically out of the race to taking it. That was impressive. The question is going to be, the country is very closely divided. So there's not landslides here in the traditional way we would understand a landslide. A landslide here would be, I mean, the president did have a landslide in electoral college votes this last go round. A landslide, yes, here would be, you know, the same kind of thing. That would be a significant win. But it's going to be closely divided. So when it's closely divided, what you have to watch is, it's not going to just be what he communicates, but how they're going to campaign in a very different environment. And that's the environment we now find ourselves in.
You know, and again, it is going to be a very different environment. And this is, again, something, let's listen to Joe Biden here trying to kind of be straightforward, talking to the people. Bite 7. Take a listen.
I have to tell you something completely honestly, straightforward. I wish this were us doing this and my supporting your reelection for President of the United States. You won the majority of the vote. I think the way in which some of the states acted was just, anyway, we'd have problems. We'd have the pandemic, but you would have already been prepared for it. Still would have been hard, but you would have done a lot to keep us from getting so in such a dire strait.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I would have done, Joe, which you know so well, I would have read my daily intelligence briefings.
I mean, right there, Dad.
What do they think?
You are
the
candidate for Democrat nominee. You're the candidate. And he's there not talking about himself becoming president, but saying, one, that he wishes it was Hillary Clinton he was just working to reelect, which he tried to run against her, by the way. He just got beat bad that last time around. And he's tried to run for president many times and never gotten this far in the process. But then, again, you get the Hillary Clinton laugh. The reason, I mean, you could just play that, is the reason why she is not president of the United States and never will be president of the United States is because she laughs during a national security crisis.
But remember,
and a pandemic.
But people need to remember this. You got a very closely divided country and a very closely divided electorate. And that, what does that mean? That means turnout's going to matter. Now, you've got a turnout now with a complication, and that complication is a pandemic. So the laws that will be passed by the various states, remember the states control their electoral process subject to constitutional limits and constitutional guidance. So what we're going to have to make sure is that they're appropriate as these methods of voting are modified, that they don't allow for voter fraud, but they don't allow for things like happened in Wisconsin, where they basically had a ballot that you could fill out after the election was complete. That not basically, that's actually what happened. That you can't have. That's not appropriate. You can't allow that to take place. So again, those are the kind of things that we're going to have to watch, and we're going to have to be aggressive about, and we will be.
You know, let's go to Tom in New York on line four. I think he makes an important point, and he's calling in from a state that's dealing with this probably the hardest right now. Tom, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi. There are lines all over Flushing for ATM machines and supermarkets, and if people can stand on line for that, they can stand on line for a voting machine. And if they can't do that, then, you know, why are they voting? You know, we don't need their vote.
Yeah, well, here's what I think they're going to do. You could put in safety measures. You can go ahead, Jordan. You can put in safety measures.
Safety measures plus than a lot more voting locations, so that because you don't want people standing in line 4, 5, 6 hours, so you would probably need more voting locations because of the need for social distancing. And that's something states could start working on right now that doesn't require having to figure out how to do mail-in ballots and all of those kind of new options. It could just mean finding new voting locations and kind of spreading out the precincts a little bit more so that the lines aren't crazy long and that you can continue social distancing, because I think Tom brings up a great point.
I think you put in place safety measures and you use tried and true technology to maybe improve that. You don't do what the Democrats did in the Iowa caucuses and roll something out that's not proven. The other thing you don't do, you absolutely do not do, Jordan, is you look at a state like Oregon. The caller said Oregon has a good system running. Can you imagine if that voter who likes the Oregon system, if the federal government came in and said, we can do it better? The last thing you want to do is pull the control away from the states and do it in a centralized way. Jordan, that is the truest way to get a failure.
All right, let's take final call of the day. Wayne in Arizona on line one. Wayne, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Wayne.
Yeah, thank you. My question was really answered regarding Congress vis-a-vis the states and voting processes. The concern I have about the write-in or the mail-in ballot is privacy, because I don't have control of that ballot until it goes into the box. It goes somewhere else, and it goes someplace where it's being counted, and they know how I voted when they open up the ballot. And I think that's a serious problem with the mail-in ballot is privacy, and I think I have the right to privacy for my voting.
That means they will allow, and I think every state's going to still allow in-person voting. I don't think that's going to stop. They will have, you may have to wear a mask, you may have to stay 6 feet apart, I'm sure you will, if the pandemic is still in the situation that it is medically. So I don't think that we're talking about the elimination of voting here, Jordan. That's not what we're talking about, of in-person voting.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I think you will be voting, you know, at your precincts or in other states. If you have concern, you can request an absentee ballot. All states allow that request, and you just need to look up the rules about when you need to do it by. So you could still, almost every state has that option to do a ballot at home, and so you can do the absentee ballot. It's just not, most states don't mail you the ballot and have no precincts where you go and actually vote. And I think that is the key. And again, we're going to be following this. It's not to take away from, I mean, the amount of deaths that have occurred from COVID-19, the amount of new infections and the pandemic that we're facing and the economic issues that we're facing as a country. But we did think we need to kind of update you on where we are, because we're getting closer and closer to Election Day, and it matters for the direction of our country. Now, Dad, we're also getting closer to the deadline for our matching challenge.
Yeah, 2 days, and we're in the most important 2 days of that matching challenge. Your support, if you're able, to the American Center for Law and Justice right now is critical. These are the two biggest days of the quarter for us. ACLJ.org, any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. Tomorrow night, we're going to have a concert that has been pre-recorded, so you're going to see the best of shows and some new songs that were done before. ACLJ.org. Support the work, though, of the ACLJ today. Matching challenge, ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at acLJ.org.